Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Welcome back in to Sports Saturday. Joining me now is Bill Brandmeier of the Sharewaves Foundation, our charitable arm here at Sports Radio 810. And Bill, we were just talking about skiing. I know you had a little ski injury, but this song is on my ski playlist, like flying down a mountain to some Walking on a Dream. I've got quite a... That's like my favorite part of... Tom, my fiancé, is quite the music guru. So he would put together these like phenomenal playlists, and I would just be... I was saying yesterday it was so beautiful outside. I was like, I need some like rollerblades. Like, yeah. I was like, I want to ski, but I don't want to be cold. I just want to do something.
I mentioned that in the show earlier today on my way in, and I was thinking, my friend has gone into the park in St. Louis, the big beautiful park,
yeah,
and took all these pictures. And we were talking about rollerblading through that park yesterday, and we were kind of being silly about it. But St. Louis, what a beautiful place, and. We're lucky to have Allie Trost here in Kansas City, everyone. I just want you all to know that having her trying to transplant herself from St. Louis and coming to share her talents with our city is exciting to watch. You've been here for 4 years?
4 years in July, which is crazy because, like, I feel like your whole life going through school, you think of, you know, your life in those, like, school increments, right? Like, you have your middle school years, which is, like, anywhere from 3 to 4 years, depending on how your school kind of breaks it down. High school, 4 years, college, 4 years. And then it's like, oh, I've been here for like, I just got my master's in Kansas City. But I love it here. I really do. And
I have
a
feeling someday
up.
I'm going to go, remember that time I was on with Allie Trost?
Oh,
like, and
gosh.
She's going to be this national person. And I'm going to be like, yeah, I was on the radio with her once.
Hey, that would be cool. Speak it into existence. I do that all the time. So. Bill, so happy to have you on with us because Sharewaves is doing so many incredible things. You've been fantastic in growing this thing, building it literally from the ground up. And so I want to start for anyone who may not know, and most people who listen to this radio station have either, you know, heard of Sharewaves, I'm sure, or gone to an event of some sort. But for anyone who might be tuning in or listening on the podcast that may not know about Sharewaves, just what is Sharewaves, you know, the mission and, you know, what sparked the Sharewaves Foundation?
So I've told the story so many times, and every time I meet someone, they're like, what are you trying to do there? So obviously the radio station has spent 21, almost 22 years now giving back to the community. And I've been a part of this incredible group of men and women that have come together to share their airwaves constantly with nonprofits. So this isn't something that is uniquely new. It's just basically trying to take the assets that are available to us and use them for good. And we love sports. We love kids. We love what we're doing. So I approached the leadership here at 810 and asked them if I could help build a foundation that would use sports to transform young lives. And the idea for Sharewaves was born. For the last 2.5 years, we've been trying to just prepare ourselves to make tangible impact. And we've built a platform. We've shared our airwaves. We partnered with nonprofits that are out there that want to use sports to connect to kids. This is all about the goodness that can come from playing sports. No one knows it better than us. We've been living it, breathing it, sharing it for 22 years now. And so Sharewaves is just kind of that culmination of how do we share our airwaves? How do we use the power of sports to transform kids? And the opportunities are endless. So I'm really excited about what's about to happen. Tangible impact is the key. You know, you can be a public relations partner and you can help promote other ideas and other events, but until you're actually giving kids an experience to have sports transform their lives, that's when the rubber meets the road for us. And so that's what 2021 is kind of all about, is how do we move from being a great idea and a great organization that tells great stories to an organization that actually is delivering sports to kids.
Well, and I've been really impressed, for being so young in your existence as Sharewaves, and to have had the pandemic a large chunk of that, 2 years that Sharewaves has, been an organization. You guys really adapted quickly and well, I think, to the pandemic and the additional challenges that it added in getting children, and especially kids in underserved communities, the access that they need to sports. And I know you all have been working on an app that you're developing, digital content, so that, hey, we can't get everyone together, but we can help bring different exercises and physical activities to kids through inspiring community leaders via social media and videos. So tell me a little bit about how COVID-19 threw a wrench into plans, because I know we've all had an experience.
You're wrapping it all up. And we were prepared last year to raise a lot of money and give it away to kids and help kids connect to sports. We had relationships with some of the top brands in Kansas City. We had a plan to have several events, kind of in a row, partnering with Chase McAnulty and Charlie Hustle and Dimensional Innovations. We're going to host a golf tournament. We're going to have a pickleball game. We had a wiffle ball game planned. All of that got canceled. We immediately switched to a mindset of how do we help kids connect to sports, stay ready to play, stay connected. And we started developing 90-second workouts. We connected with athletes. We connected with coaches, high school coaches, fitness trainers. And we just said, hey, can you put together a quick 90-second video? We've created a script for you. This is what we wanted to see. And we had over 100 different trainers create content for us. We pushed that out through our website. No one really knew where our website was. We pushed it out through different channels. It wasn't, certainly it wasn't adopted like I was hoping. But if you think back into April, all of the things that were happening in our world, all of the fear that was out there, all of the uncertainty, this was just something we could hang our hat on. We could look back and go, yeah, we created some content. That has turned into a whole mission for us. Ready to Play is this idea that we need to make sure that we're mind, body, and spirit prepared for anything that might happen to us, especially as we transition out of the restrictions that were brought on by COVID. And so what Sharewaves has kind of identified in our world, trying to help kids advance their opportunities to play sports, is how do we assist them in reengaging with life, understanding that they have gone through traumatic experiences, being separated from not only sports, but any extracurricular activity, anything that would give a kid some sense of there's more people out there in this world that are experiencing life like I am. Those were all shut down. They were all sent home. And living in their homes, they experienced a type of isolation and a type of loneliness that we will not really understand. But as they come out of it, we need to help them. And that's what Sharewaves is kind of focused on this spring and this summer, is how do we help kids reengage with life, reengage with sports, and how do we help them recover from a year of lost sports development?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, as someone who, I'm one of four kids, sports and activity as a child was very, crucial in who I am and making me who I am today. And I can't even imagine having honestly lived this pandemic at any other point in my life. I really do feel for a lot of these kids. And I had a chance to call some high school games with Spectrum Sports and was talking with, various coaches of these girls' high school teams. And all of them, said just how tough this pandemic was on these young girls who missed out on an entire year of sports and the development that comes along with that. You're a sophomore one minute, you miss an entire season, all of a sudden you're a senior, and all of the responsibility that comes with that, a very challenging time and transitional time in life as well.
Yeah, and the NCAA, they gave a year of eligibility back to every single athlete. But in high school, we can't do that. Mm-hmm. And these kids do have to progress through their, through their high school experience and be on track to graduate. We weren't going to, give kids an extra year to go to high school.
Right.
So, there's some things I think we can do to help accelerate. It is certainly true that COVID has increased the gap between the haves and the have-nots. Mm-hmm. And it has made it really clear that there are certain resourced communities and certain resourced families that can use their you know, resources to keep their kids connected, to keep mm-hmm. their kids involved with sports, keep them developing. But there is a large number of kids that have been forgotten, that have been that do not have those resources. And that's where ShareWays really wants to spend their time and attention. We believe that sports access is and structured play is critical for kids benefiting from their physical education, physical development, but also social emotional growth and academic development. All of those things are enhanced by being connected to a sports team and having sports mentors take kids to better places. So,
yeah. Well, and I don't think we'll know for a long time just how much COVID, you know, has impacted our youth. I think we have a really good idea, but I think as studies come out and in the years to come, we'll have an even better idea. But it's organizations like ShareWaves that are acting now and not waiting to try and reverse course to step in when, you know, there isn't a chance to maybe kind of intervene. So let's kind of get into those key initiatives for impact in 2021, because I know you've got a lot of great things outlined and maybe more ability to have some of those things come to fruition this season this year.
I think so. And every time I go to the drawing, you know, kind of go to the group and say, what are we? We are great partners. We love nonprofits that use sports to connect to kids, that have programming that deliver, you know, incredible life skills to kid and connections and help them develop in their sports journey. So those are great partners, and we have a number of those. And there's a number of groups that are understanding that there are emergent issues, emergent needs that need to be addressed. There's also systemic needs. And so we're going to identify those. We're going to start to try to look into the community and find the sports deserts where kids are suffering the most, and we want to deliver actual sports to those kids in a way that I think is unique and I'm excited about. So as we go through 2021, we decided to identify five key initiatives that will drive us through this year. Unlike most years, when I think of strategic planning and what do we want to be when we grow up and how are we going to build something, I usually think in terms of big objectives and then strategic initiatives and then tactical execution. It's a traditional marketing way of thinking of how you build something. To this year, what we were convinced of was that delivering sports to kids was the only thing that mattered. Finding ways to deliver sports to kids, either working with YMCA, working with Boys and Girls Club, working with Operation Breakthrough, working with Girls on the Run, working with TOCA FC, working with Global FC, all of these incredible organizations, 501c3s, have gone a year without really being able to connect to their kids. And we are a radio station. We're a broadcast media company. We pride ourselves in being able to tell stories as well as any sports organization in the city. Why wouldn't we use our charitable arm to help these organizations tell their story and help them raise money and help support kids? So a lot of our efforts in 2021 are built around those five initiatives that deliver sports to kids. And so I'd love to take you through them. They're really quick. It's not that hard to understand.
Let's jump right in.
So the first one is to deliver microfunding grants through some sort of relationship with an organization that uses a mentor-mentee program. We like this idea of mentor-mentee because the mentors are pre-vetted. They already have trust. They've already developed a relationship with someone that they're helping to mentor and helping to deliver, you know, good life skills. What we want to do is use that knowledge that they have, the intimate knowledge of what the kids need, have them identify where the kid might need help in getting connected to sports, and then give them the money to do that, whether it be league fees or equipment that they might need, or it might just be, you know, having a really fun day out at the, you know, new Kansas City women's soccer game, you know, just a connection to sports that goes beyond what they currently have available to them. We are going to meet with organizations like Big Brothers and Big Sisters. We're going to meet with High Aspirations. We're going to meet with TOCA FC. All of these and a number of other organizations that use a mentor-mentee mentality to deliver life skills to kids, and we want to give them some money. And so that's our first initiative. Our second one?
I was just going to say, you can roll right through, because I think, okay, you know, it's important for people to hear, you know, what you all are doing and definitely okay, how they can get involved.
Yeah, awesome. So the second thing is to these ready-to-play training experiences. We're calling them training camps. We're doing some at-home stuff. We have this app that you mentioned. The app was developed by our good friends at the Rack Performance Company. They are a software company that helps high schools throughout the country do strength and conditioning management. They help them deliver strength and conditioning to their athletes athletes in the off season and also in the on season. During COVID, they created an app that would help coaches deliver workouts to their athletes, and we are taking that over. We're going to use that to deliver workouts to kids targeting middle schoolers in the KCK school district. We're also going to come alongside several organizations that want to do live camps this summer, and we're going to do ready-to-play training experiences with those organizations. I'm talking about groups like KC United, which has been in KCK for 13 years, helping kids play football. They do cheerleading. Now they do STEM development on weekends. They educate kids. They educate parents on how to manage their teenagers. And this organization, headed up by Pastor Adrian Roberson, has kind of made a mark in helping kids, kind of navigate this high school experience with the power of sports. There's other organizations like that. So the training experiences are there. The third thing we're doing it right now, create content that talks about the power of sports to transform lives. This is what we're doing today. We're creating some content. We're letting people know that sports is an amazing thing for kids to experience, and connecting kids to sports can never be a bad thing. There can be bad situations. Those need to be rectified. There's some things that are barriers that don't have anything to do with money or connecting kids. Transportation's an issue, or maybe it's a bad coach, or maybe it's a bad bad league or whatever. But most people that are involved in helping deliver sports to young people are in the right space. They're doing the right things and they're working hard. The fifth thing we're going to do is create a kind of a community-wide effort to identify participation as one of the key aspects to changing youth sports. Youth sports has kind of moved to a pay-for-play mentality. That pay-for-play mentality locks out a lot of kids from the kind of training that they deserve. So we want to get a group of people, we want the right stakeholders around the table to talk about how it is that we can get more participation, more inclusion, more free play, more unorganized ways of kids to just have positive activity around sports, and we've got some plans to do that. And the final thing is to have some high-energy, one-of-a-kind events that raise awareness and support missions. Every 501c3 does events, but no one does them quite like we do. 810 has had incredible experiences doing event after event after event. They're pros at it. They're helping me learn how to throw events. I have a lot of event background. We like to create creative events that people can have fun at that isn't, the old stale, sit around a table, eat a really bad piece of chicken and have, raise your paddle to donate. We want things to be fun, energetic. We want to involve sports, and we want to involve the people that love to listen to 810 to be a part of what we're doing. So those are the five initiatives. Each of them are at different stages. One of the things that we think is really fun is to be able to come on the air and talk about how sports transforms lives. And you and I have talked about some ideas around that. But, those are the five initiatives, and ShareWaves is ready to make a difference.
Yeah, I know I'm looking forward to collaborating, with you and getting different voices on air here to kind of shed light on some of the different issues that ShareWaves looks to directly target and change. And it's going to be really fun because, here on this show, I know me and Blake is a Kansas City high school graduate, went to Bishop Miege, and, we like to bring on voices of, different high school coaches, high school players, and really elevate, youth sports and high school sports here in Kansas City and in this area, and how important they are, like you said, Bill, to the development of our youth. And I know you all have an event coming up, the Blasters, on May 16th. It was wildly successful last year. You can go to www.blasterskc.com for more information. But raising money to reconnect kids to sports after a year of lost development, that is the crux of ShareWaves here. And the event will benefit ShareWaves and your nonprofit partners, the First Tee of Greater Kansas City and Youth on Course, which is fantastic. Didn't you say the money raised will help go to try and get, X number of lessons for youth area kids in golf?
Right. So the First Tee of Greater Kansas City is founded by Tom Watson and a team of people. It's a national organization now. Mm-hmm. They've gone through a little bit of transition in their leadership, but they are wholly focused on delivering golf to kids and the life lessons that you can get from golf. And, it's just amazing to watch the Masters this weekend and all of the different skills that are out there, the different players and how they come up through youth golf.
A lot of young guys,
yeah,
too.
Mark Howe was a young guy.
It's we were cool. just talking about, you know, just it's golf. I love golf. Grew up, it's a
It's an amazing game, and it's a good COVID game. COVID has really kind of sparked an increase throughout the city. But you know, First Tee hasn't asked for money for over a year now. They are struggling to try to figure out how they're going to have the summer the way they want it, and the number of kids that they want to run through their organization. And so for every $300 we raise, we can send one kid through the three sessions of First Tee. And that is, you know, one of our goals is to send as many kids as we can. We have a goal of sending at least 810 kids. That's $25,000. We think we can raise that for the First Tee. So part of the Blasters will be raising money for our five initiatives, and also to help the organization like First Tee deliver golf to kids this summer. The Youth on Course group is amazing. It's headed up by Doug Habel and Bailey Stevenson. They're golf people through and through. They love it. They love the game. The way that the organization is set up is it allows kids to play courses throughout the city for $5. No matter where, no matter what, they can book a tee time, and it's a $5 round for these kids. And that's what these kids need as they develop their skills, is the experiences of playing different kinds of courses and being in different experiences with their golf shots. And so that's what Youth on Course is all about. So we're excited about the Blasters. We're going to be able to announce some really incredible guests that are going to join us to help support this endeavor. That's the one thing great about ShareWaves, is we've got great supporters, former athletes, current athletes, coaches, different trainers, and the PGA golf pros that are out there that support what we're doing, because they all see this as a unique opportunity for us to get on to the largest sports talk radio station in the Midwest and let people know that kids need help and that we have some really well planned out ways of delivering the support and the love that these kids need to help them get through this crisis that is no one's fault, but has really been hard on these kids.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for joining us. It was great to, you know, hear more about each of those ways that ShareWaves is looking to make a difference in these kids' lives. And you can go to sharewavesfoundation.org to make a donation, learn more about the ShareWaves Foundation, get, you know, linked to all the great events and initiatives that you all will have going on this year. So I'm excited for the Blasters. Unfortunately, I think I'll probably be out of town that weekend, but I was there for the first go round, and it was such a great event. And, you know, I just think it's incredible what ShareWaves is doing, you know, individually as an organization and in collaboration with other organizations that are working to bring kids closer to sports. So, you know, really appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk with us.
Well, I look forward to coming back more often. Thank you so much, Allie.
Thanks,
awesome.
Bill. Take care. Well, before we take a quick break, I did just see here on the Twitter.com that the Royals game this afternoon has been postponed due to inclement weather. So the game between the Chicago White Sox and Kansas City Royals has been postponed. So that will not be taking place at the scheduled time, which I believe was just supposed to be this afternoon around 1:10 p.m. So they will not be playing in that game. It has been postponed. And I got a text from my friend Sean Goodwin, who wanted me to clear something up that he misspoke about on air. He, of course, is downtown watching the Liverpool game and said that it turns out, and I'm not watching the game here, obviously, we're on air, but he was saying that Liverpool's goal was disallowed and they're actually losing 1-0, not winning 1-0. So he goes, now I just sound dumb. And I, you know, Sean, you never sound dumb. I know you're not listening. I know you're probably three beers deep down at the Dubliner, which I applaud you for. You do not sound dumb. It's my fault that I, you know, he was generous enough with his time to come on during his team's game. So if you are a Liverpool fan, they're not winning. So we misspoke in the first hour there. They are actually losing. The score might be totally different now. And if you're listening to this on podcast, it will not matter. That's the latest from Sean Goodwin at the Dubliner. Go say hi, grab a beer with them. There's a great network of, you know, just international soccer fans here in Kansas City, whether it's Arsenal, whether it's Liverpool, any of those great fan bases all around. You can go downtown and enjoy games with people. I'm still in between what my team's going to be. I've got an Arsenal fan that I live with. I don't know if I can support Stan Kroenke in that way, but maybe I will come around and I don't know. We'll have to see. But we're going to take a quick break here on Sports Saturday. And when we come back, Aaron Borgman of Borgman Rehab Solutions will join me to talk about all things NFL Medical Combine, a really, critical weekend in the NFL right now, leading up to the NFL draft at the end of this month. So his insight is incredible. A 12-year NFL veteran, worked for the Chiefs and the Eagles as a PT and athletic trainer. So much great insight from him on what is going down behind the scenes this weekend. We'll hear all of these different reports on players and medical evaluations, but he provides greater context to that conversation and what it all means. So Aaron Borgman will be joining us next right here on Sports Saturday. Happy Masters weekend, everybody. We'll be back after this. Hello, everybody, and welcome back in to Sports Saturday. I'm Allie Trost, and joining me now on the show, Aaron Borgman, the owner of Borgman Rehab Solutions, an experienced PT and athletic trainer who is a 12-year NFL veteran, having worked with the Chiefs and the Eagles, and a former colleague of mine at Arrowhead Pride, which I know is, I'm sure, Aaron, high on your list of accolades and achievements. I'm kidding. How's it going,
my friend? It's one of the latest, so it's up there.
Hey, same here. So great time working with you there, and we're really happy to be talking with you and get your insight ahead of the 2021 NFL draft, where evaluating some of these players, assessing previous injuries and what risks those might carry for a team looking to draft certain players. It's really an interesting time. But before we get into some of that, I do want to look back on 2020 with you, because I remember we had talked for our NFL Live KC show maybe last summer, it was just about the upcoming season and how big of a challenge that was for people in your position, for athletic trainers, for the PTs and rehab, and getting, you know, all of those health risks sorted out and in a proper plan in place. So now that the 2020 season has obviously come to an end and we get ready for another season where we're not quite out of the woods yet with COVID-19 and everything, but how would you just, I guess, put into words what the league and what these individual teams were able to achieve last year with getting an entire NFL season from start to completion?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me. It's a great question. I've been asked this question quite a bit, and what I would say is it's nothing short of amazing, quite frankly. And yes, let's be perfectly clear, some teams did have some issues. But when you think of athletic trainers to begin with, these are the people that are on the forefront and the front lines every day, normally, outside of a pandemic, right? And so now what you've done is, as the lead medical people in the building, they're responsible for the logistics and the carrying out of everything that happened for every team. And yes, some teams did it a little bit differently than others, but by and far, there was a league standard of how people had to come in the building, how much time they could spend in the building, how many times they had to be tested a day, a week, the locations they had to be tested. And oh, by the way, this is on top of everything that they already did. And so just to be able to have a season, not even counting having, you know, successful seasons by this COVID standards, but you know, that in itself is really a credit to those people, logistically, medically, and, you know, not even preventing the contraction of the virus, but when people did have it, what plans they had in place, the mitigation of, you know, these individuals that didn't want to be these kind of super spreaders and this and that. And so really, I talked to my friends around the league, and it's just amazing what they had to go through to do their job to begin with, and then put all of this on top of it. My hat is off to each and every one of them, and they deserve so much more credit than they will receive.
Well, and Aaron, like I said, not quite out of the woods just yet, but at least going into this 2021 season, there will be some sort of blueprint. It's only a year to look back on it, and there's been a lot of progress made in areas with containing the virus, getting people vaccinated, and other measures to ensure a safer season and maybe a little bit more normal of a season. But the 2021 NFL draft, you know, there's still some challenges that these teams are facing, and a lot of that comes down to properly evaluating players and getting a a full report on them, you know, injury history, medical evaluations, and yesterday and today are the two most important days in the entire 21 pre-draft evaluation process with the medical combine, which is happening in Indy. And for those who don't know what this entails, each team will have one physician and one athletic trainer in attendance with close to 150 prospects to evaluate. So this is going to be a very critical weekend for teams. How much do you see this weekend and this medical combine changing some of the draft projections?
Yeah, so let's take a step back. Last year, like as messed up as last year was for a football season, at least they had the combine, right? And a lot of people look at the combine, and, you know, I've championed this for years after I've gotten out, and people look at the combine and they go, oh, the drills, you know, the meetings, the interviews and all that. None of that really, really, truly matters in the scope of things. It's the medicals that are the most important. So last year they had all that. And I always like to say that, you know, our job in the league was not to tell people who to pick. It was to tell people who not to pick, you know, because as medical staffs, we were looking for, you know, red flags that would tell people like, okay, well, you might want to pick this guy, but he's only going to have 3 to 5 years in the league because of X, Y, and Z. And so we can't tell people who they should select, but we can give them all the information, be like, okay, look, if you're going to want this guy, just understand he may not make it to a second contract. So that could affect his draft status. All that in mind, when the stories first started coming out this year about there being no combine, well, that's all fine and good because you could do pro days. You can do, you know, watch the film to see if anybody can, you know, play the position you're looking for them in the league. But without reliable medical information, it's a ticking time bomb, quite frankly, because then what you're doing is you're relying on second and third hand accounts, either from other collegiate medical staffs that may or may not even be present, or, you know, the players and agents themselves, which is about as dangerous as anything, because they want to get drafted too, right?
Yeah.
And so I see this thing that they're doing this week as a critical, critical piece. You know, it's not as many people as what they usually have, but at least you're going to get a better unified picture and results that you know that you can trust from your staffs checking out the players. And then everything is kind of at least a little bit more lined up. Now, the late draft guys, the undrafted free agent guys, we're going to find out that when those guys all report to camps league-wide that there's going to be some surprises, and that's to be expected. But at least these guys that you're paying the most money to and valuing the highest, then you're going to have a better, more clear picture, which without that, there was going to be a lot of confusion and a lot of people left in the dark, quite frankly. And so I applaud the league for taking this step.
We're visiting with Aaron Borgman, the owner of Borgman Rehab Solutions and a former PT athletic trainer, 12-year NFL veteran working with the Chiefs and the Eagles. And Aaron, you mentioned some of those, you know, hey, player X might not have a career more than 3 to 5 years based on ABC, you know, these things. What are some of those different criteria that individuals like yourself would be looking at to make that final assessment or come to that conclusion?
Yeah, so it's a great question, Allie. Every team has their own unique grading scale for both medical internal conditions or orthopedic, you know, bones, joints, muscular conditions. And so while the condition in the athlete doesn't change, each team and the medical staffs may rate those or grade those a little bit differently. By and large, it's a pretty uniform standard. So if a person had, for instance, you know, an ACL tear, that's one thing. But if a person has an ACL tear with, you know, cartilage degeneration and it's really, really loose and then they're not very strong, well, okay, that's another thing. That doesn't mean that they can't be drafted, but they just have to be graded differently. And so what we did all those years is we said, you know, look, here's this person. They have XYZ condition and here's their grade. And that grade means this, this, and this. So, you know, a lot of people league-wide would take those grades and they go, well, you know, we don't care what the grade is because this person might be really, really good for 5 to 7 years. Okay, great. Just know that you now have that information that can never be, you know, held back to like, you didn't tell us that kind of thing, or, you know, we weren't aware of that kind of thing. So all our job was as a medical staff was to say, hey, look, here's the condition. Here's what we think. Here is the risk that you're taking in, whether that is very, very minimal risk or this is a lot of risk. Here's the information. Take with it and do with it what you need to do. This person, you know, might have a little bit. This person has a lot. Here's the all the information we can give you. Go forth from here kind of deal.
So when it comes to taking that risk, I guess, as a team, what are some commonalities, I guess, that you've maybe seen across the board, whether it's a particular injury that doesn't end up being as big of a, you know, detriment to a player's career going forward at that next level, despite, you know, previous injury history? Are there any commonalities that you find between players who end up being able to still succeed in the NFL despite maybe having that kind of flag on them during this time as a risky investment for a team?
Yeah, so it's a really interesting question because in my experience, and I know that's a dangerous term, but in my experience, it varies very much by position because an injury, one injury might mean something different to an O lineman versus, you know, a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. You know, a shoulder labrum in a older O lineman is a big deal because they have to punch all day, every day. Well, in a linebacker who doesn't do that motion or a wide receiver who just has to get his arm above his head, not the same thing. And so then what you do is you not only do you assess the risk of the condition, but you assess the positional risk. You know, so an O lineman that comes out with a really bad back or a really nasty arthritic foot, you know, that's a problem for us in the league, as opposed to a wide receiver that had a disc herniation in his back or one time had a broken fifth metatarsal. They can get by with that a little bit easier because they don't have as much weight to deal with. They don't have as much load to tolerate. And so not only are you doing it by condition, but you also take into assess the positional factors as well. You know, a punter that has a bad back, all right, well, we can get by with that because he can still boot the ball 65 yards. Not a big deal. An O lineman that has the same bad back, same condition, that's going to be a little bit of an issue for us. So, you know, a constant sliding scale, quite frankly.
Well, and Aaron, just injuries with players currently in the league. Last year, I feel like those first few weeks of the season, we saw an unprecedented number of injuries happening across the league. Some teams impacted more than others, the 49ers, I think, being one of those teams. What do you think that was a result of? Of course, there was an unusual preseason and the buildup was different. It wasn't the standard what players and teams are used to with the COVID-19 pandemic, but was that really just in your estimation, the reason we were seeing so many injuries so early on in the season?
Yeah, another good question. You know, obviously, as a person who is in the business of mitigating and you know, reducing injuries, you know, we don't like to see that for the league. And there was a pretty big piece put out this week by the NFLPA president that said, you know, injuries were on par with other years. That's the story coming from one side. I haven't, you know, verified that with other sources or anything like that. So there's definitely some spins coming out on this side of the issue. And, you know, as a person who used to be involved from the team standpoint, I can tell you that we always preferred that there be a larger run-up, a longer acclimatization period. You know, you have the players in the building doing one uniform program as opposed to being out at their home facilities, all training a little bit differently by people who don't have any vested interest in the league or the team. You know, that's less preferable. The numbers are the numbers. However, we did see certain teams undergo rashes of injuries, and those weren't all the same injuries. They happened to be some pretty catastrophic injuries, meaning season ending. And that then comes to question, well, did the team do something different or unique? And did their in-house program, once they got players, did they ramp them up too quickly, or did they go too hard, or did they not go hard enough? And so I think, you know, we won't ever have access to a lot of that information because all that's kept in-house, pretty tight-lipped. But I think what you see is when it's one team having a lot of the same thing or a lot of, you know, season-ending injuries, well, then you can kind of question how they went about things. But if it's league-wide, then you can kind of make some more, you know, kind of big-picture guesses as to what the reason might be. I think if you look back at the total amounts of injuries and the types of injuries, we saw it really, really front-loaded, which kind of dictates the fact that maybe that hopefully this year the NFL and the PA kind of come together on a plan to get a longer acclimatization period before guys start going hot and heavy in camp and hitting real hard and things like that. Hopefully they get it all worked out so we see that less big bolus of injuries at the beginning of the season.
Well, and another injury I know a lot of Chiefs fans are watching closely is Patrick Mahomes' turf toe injury that he sustained during the playoffs and received and underwent surgery for in the offseason. And he was spotted Easter weekend wearing the boot, and Pat McAfee was asking, hey, you all good? And Ian Rappaport did follow up with a report saying that Mahomes come, you know, training camp and all those things will be good to go. Just in your experience with turf toe injuries, what is the timeline, and is there any lingering issues that can kind of creep up after someone is cleared to play?
Yeah, so just real basically, the injury that he had, his great toe on his left side, it affected something underneath the toe called the plantar plate. And it sounds a lot sturdier than what it really is, but it's just a big piece of tissue that when you have a turf toe injury or your toe gets kind of hyperextended upward, that big piece of tissue that kind of holds the joint in place and gives it a little bit extra stability can get torn. And so what they did is they went in and they repaired that. And the good news for Chiefs fans, I think, to think about is that surgical procedure has a very high rate of success. That's not something that you see a lot of revisions or you have to go in and redo. Typically, players, unless there's some, you know, trauma where, you know, a guy gets fallen on and his foot gets pinned or something like that, typically we don't see that injury come back, especially at a position like we're talking about here. QBs don't get it all that often to begin with, let alone have a big trauma incident with it. So I think I understand that it's the franchise and it's the most visible player and all that. I think that most people, unless we find out something to the contrary, based upon the information that we know, we can rest assured that this guy is going to have some pretty good success rates with this particular injury.
Well, and not to mention, we've seen him play through various injuries throughout his career, and is whether or not that is necessarily a good or bad thing when it comes to preserving the body and making sure that you're not creating a bigger issue out of a smaller ailment. We do know that Patrick Mahomes is a very competitive individual. He's going to always put himself and his body on the line for his team, which we saw, of course, him do in the Super Bowl. Aaron Borgman is our guest, owner of Borgman Rehab Solutions. And Aaron, just one last question for you. The NFL did approve that 17th game for the regular season from a risk standpoint as far as injuries are concerned. How do you feel about this decision? I know, you know, different players were online, but it was approved and it's going to happen. So just, I guess, your reaction to that decision and what it means for player health and safety moving forward.
Well, yeah, and it's a very hot topic, right? Lots of opinions both ways. From a person who used to have to take care of these people and, you know, bust my backside to keep people on the field or get them back on the field in a weekly fashion, I think it does obviously bring into a talking point of, is it worth it for extra injury risk? You know, is that something that coaching staffs and medical staffs are going to take into account this year with how they structure practices and off days? Because now you're talking, everybody has a guaranteed extra set of reps. Everybody has a guaranteed extra set of collisions. And so are people going to adapt that way this first year or wait and see how it goes? I think the lazy answer would be to say, of course, we're going to see injuries, you know, spike up because of this. But, you know, the league is pretty cognizant of that. And, you know, there's some really smart medical staffs and teams and coaching staffs out there that I think what you're going to see is you're going to see them take some pretty unique approaches as to how they go about preparing people for this. You know, do we see no starters in two preseason games now? Do we see people take extra days off and only practice 2 days a week? These are all the things that people are currently discussing around the league and how they're going to go about it. And I think a lot of it's going to come into play later in the season, obviously, when we see how banged up teams really are. And do they need, you know, there's teams around the league that are famous for only having one real practice a week and two walkthroughs. Does that trend continue? So, you know, I think this first season, this first go-round is going to be a wait and see. And then next season, what we'll see is everybody copies and pastes what happened to be successful this year, because it is a copycat league for sure.
Well, and similar, I guess, with what we might see with the COVID-19 pandemic and protocols going into this season. Again, things are a lot different now than they were at this point going into the 2020 season. But different areas of learning and growing happening across the NFL. Aaron, thank you so much for the time and for joining us. Always incredible insight from you. And I know you're hanging out in St. Louis this weekend, my hometown. What do you got on the docket for the weekend?
Also, my adopted hometown where I went to school. I grew up just outside of St. Louis. We'll have a little golf weekend, Masters, some real crust pizza, toasted ravioli, that kind of
yes,
thing.
Yes, I love it. I love it. I get so much crap here in Kansas City for my love of Emo's Pizza, the thin crust, the Provel cheese. Makes my mouth water. But you mentioned the Masters. Who do you got winning?
Oh, man. My heart says Jordan Spieth. My head says Justin Thomas. So.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited. Tom, my fiance, is like so in on golf. He's obsessed, all in on the Masters. My brother Danny played collegiately, is just so into golf too. So whether I chose to, by choice this weekend or not, I will be participating in some sort of Masters activity and definitely viewing it as well. But have so much fun in St. Louis and best of luck out there on the course.
Thank you so much for having me today, Allie. It was good talking to you as always.